actually worked out okay that we were unable to record this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast from PurpleRoad.com and the ghost of Denver's ESPN 102.3. It worked out that we didn't get to record yesterday because yesterday was like the end of the world, and then they went out and won yesterday. So it kind of, and somebody tweeted at us earlier and said, maybe this will be a good thing. Maybe they'll get a chance to go out, get a win. It'll be a little bit more positive episode, and it is.
But they still blew a late inning lead.
Which I'm actually surprised that they did not do multiple times. Yesterday, that is. Yeah. They've done it multiple times. They only tried to do it once, and they succeeded at blowing it once.
They only tried. So
I got out of my car. Walked into a store. They had just taken the lead. I was in the store for 30 seconds, and I saw the tweet from at Rockies, which was Rockies take lead. Rangers respond with back-to-back homers. It was like all encapsulated in one tweet, and I was like, oh, that didn't take long at all.
No, it did not.
Never mind.
It's just kind of what we do at this point. I don't know.
But hey, they won.
They ended up winning.
They ended up pulling it out.
They won, though, and we've mentioned this before, and we'll mention it again, but we wanted this season to be like 2006. We wanted them to see strides taken
from a young team
congealing as a unit and then becoming the team we saw in 2007 when they went to the World Series.
A nice jello mold. Congealing into a good jello mold. A nice holiday dessert.
Okay, yeah. And then, moving on. This team, after 115 games, is 56 and 59. And in 2006, the team after 115 games was 56 and 59.
Huh. Who?
Funny how that works.
It's almost like we kind of have an idea of what we're talking about.
No, that's 100% not true.
Just, you know, being a part of TMZ Row and just being controversial.
And speaking of TMZ Row, like,
we've got
the ringleader,
the
of
man
TMZ
himself,
on the show today. Brian Kilpatrick stops
Brian
by.
Brian Kilpatrick stops by the show. Hey, by the way, welcome in. It's episode number 84 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
Oh my God, 84.
Today's episode is named after Hall of Fame Denver Broncos tight end Shannon Sharp, because there's never an off season for talking Broncos football.
I'm going to get to know Shannon Sharp pretty well, because he is going to be the new Stephen A. Smith. He is Skip Bayless's new foil starting on September 6th, I believe, on FS1.
What happened to All Takes Matter?
That's still on the air.
But they're going to do both of them?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. What?
What are you talking about? It's going to be Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp from 7 to 9, Colin Coward from 9 to 12, and then Speak for Yourself.
Oh, yeah.
It's
Colin Coward and Jason Whitlock. I was confusing which loudmouth white guy they were placing where. Huh.
Yeah, well, you'll figure it out.
I won't, actually, because I don't have cable. But I assume it'll go well. And, you know, Shannon Sharp, nice dude.
Yeah.
Nice dude.
Yeah.
See if we can get him on the show to talk Broncos football.
Wow.
There's never an off season.
Yeah, there is.
We're talking it, from what I've heard.
There really is. That's the thing. Like, wait, we're Broncos fans, and we're like, yeah, you can stop talking about them
for a while. You can not talk about it for a while. It's really going to be okay. I promise. Everything will be fine.
Yeah.
Really. There really can be.
The world won't end. It's fine.
There really can be an off season for talking it. Episode number 84 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast arrives to you. And today, not one, but two guests. As we mentioned, Brian Kilpatrick.
Yeah, you know, Brian Kilpatrick was the headliner.
Of TMZ Row, purpleroad.com, and on Twitter at purplerowbk is where you can find Brian. Also, a scrappy young up-and-comer. In the Colorado Rockies organization.
We got Daniel Descalzo?
Yeah. Major league outfielder / first baseman / mob boss, Daniel Descalzo. One Nolan Arenado will join the show.
Woo!
Woo! Talked to Nolan, and then they went out and lost three in a row to the Rangers. But, and it was coming off of that loss to the Marlins. But
it wasn't his fault.
Though. No, it wasn't his fault. Nolan's been fantastic as of late. We're excited for that. We are very excited.
Yeah.
I'm very aroused. Okay, here's where we stand. Colorado Rockies, as Anthony just noted, 56 and 59.
You don't even listen to me anymore.
No, I don't. I never listen to you.
God.
56 and 59 in total, and a team that, you know, over the last week should really have the inverse of that record, but for the bullpen. The Rockies lost of that homestand against the Dodgers and Marlins and Rangers. They lost 5 games by 3 runs or fewer, and virtually everything due to the bullpen. They didn't get anything going in support of Tyler Chatwood against Kenta Maeda in the series finale against the Dodgers. But then Carlos Estevez blows the save against the Marlins in the 9th inning, in which the Rockies had rallied to take a lead going into the 9th. That was back on August 5th, a blown save there. Rockies get the win the next day behind Chad Bettis. Then the John Gray game, in which Ichiro gets his 3,000th hit, that was just kind of a weird one. Gray had a really rough start early. The offense came to life. They end up losing that game 10-7. But then the back-to-back blown games against the Rangers really, really hurt you. Then they go on the road to Texas. They blow a game there, too. Yeah, so it hasn't been a fun week. It's been one of those Rockies bullpen weeks.
Yeah, if they would have lost that game yesterday, it would have been 6 losses in the last 11 games where they had a lead in the 7th inning or later.
Ugh.
6 in 11. That is beyond farce, as I mentioned on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, that is not good.
That doesn't make any sense in any way, shape, or form.
But there are positives. They won yesterday.
After blowing the lead in the 7th inning, that team could have completely packed it in, you know, put everything in their bags, walked on the field and said, all right, well, that was done. Just another ho-hum bullpen blowing the loss.
Right.
And then they came back the next half inning and scored 4 runs, took the lead, and then didn't allow anything else to happen the rest of the way and ended up winning that game. That
right.
is the mark of a team that is taking strides, at least. And we mentioned this on Twitter yesterday. Some people were tweeting in at us. We like the fact that this has just been a stretch where really just one thing has gone wrong. It hasn't been a million things going wrong at once. It hasn't been the bullpen, in addition to the offense, in addition to situational hitting, in addition to the starting pitching. It has been just the bullpen. And so when it's one thing you can really lock in on, I think that's a lot better. Because in that 11-game stretch, they've been 4-7 since that game they lost to the Mets on July 31st. They're scoring 6.5 runs a game. They're hitting .307 as a team. They have 12 homers in the last 11 games, .844 OPS. I mean, it's been a lot of good things you can take from it. It's just, you know, it's been rough the last few days.
They don't have,
well, especially in the late innings, of course,
they don't have a winning mindset the way someone like Tim Tebow would provide for them.
Know that Tim Tebow can play baseball?
That much we know. Well, I have heard that Tim Tebow is already a Major League All-Star. Here's my favorite thing about the Tim Tebow thing, which I've not clicked on Purple Rose story, and I refuse to. I love that Tim Tebow's announcement was that he wanted to play Major League Baseball.
Yeah,
like, as if he would just slide into a Major League roster. Oh, okay, we'll clear a spot for you.
Yeah.
Buck Showalter yesterday had a really good quote in which he started to go all in, like really started to go off on the whole Tebow thing, and then kind of reined it back and was like, all right, maybe I shouldn't say all of this yet. But he was certainly not amused with this whole thing because it's a joke, but basically said, you know, I look at what our guys go through at the Dominican Academy and in Aberdeen and in Frederick and in Bowie and in Norfolk and in Delmarva, and that's not a joke. Those guys work their entire lives and bust their asses and sacrifice, and somebody thinks he can just go, I haven't played this sport in 10 years. Bet I can play at the major league level. It's not funny.
Yeah,
it's not realistic.
My favorite argument, though, is that, Russell Wilson could play baseball. No, he couldn't.
He
hit .220 in low A.
Yeah, Russell Wilson couldn't play baseball in the South Atlantic League.
Yeah.
So, no, this is – and Russell Wilson was somebody who actually played baseball in college.
Yeah.
Like, actually could have been developed into some type of prospect had he taken the time to fully invest himself in it.
Yeah, clearly we see what he can do when he fully invests himself in something.
But basically, the Rockies need to sign Tim Tebow and put him in the bullpen, is what we're saying. Because there's never an offseason for talking Broncos football.
Or for talking Tim Tebow.
Or for talking Tim Tebow. Actually, the best best take that
Bayless.
I saw.
Can't wait to get Skip Bayless.
That'll Tebow be fun. He's coming up on next week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
Yeah,
Skip Bayless and Tim Tebow. Yeah,
his precursor to starting his new show on FS1 will be to come right here. This is where
all
the tough questions
matter.
Get asked.
This is where the media tour begins.
This is where we start embracing debate on the PDP.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So anyway, that's enough of that topic of conversation. There's one thing you can point to. One thing that has been really rough the last week, and that's the bullpen. And when you are in a stretch where things aren't going your way, if there is one thing that is more than likely going to be the thing that fails you, it's the bullpen. That's a normal baseball thing to happen. This is one of those stretches where everything's falling apart at the same time, and that's a positive.
And it's so weird because everyone says, oh, well, they need to go out and get bullpen help. Well, bullpens are the most volatile pieces of any 25-man roster on a year-to-year basis. I mean, they went out last year and tried to get bullpen help. They tried to get Chad Qualls, tried to get Jason Mott. They signed Boone Logan a few years back trying to get the same kind of bullpen help. These guys work in such small sample sizes, you never know how a guy's going to react from one season to the next. We've seen that with Boone Logan. The first 2 years of his contract was absolutely dreadful, and this year he's been an incredibly effective reliever. So it's hard to go out and say, oh, this guy's going to be a slam dunk. His guy's a sure bet to be a big-time bullpen guy. You never know that. Next year, Jason Mott and Chad Qualls could be healthy, and they could be dominant like it was 4 years ago. You absolutely never know. There are very few exceptions. A guy like Aroldis Chapman, yeah, he's probably going to be good. But those guys are very few and far between. So, you know, next year, if Estevez gets a year under his belt, feels a lot better in his role, maybe Miguel Castro gets some confidence back and gets back in the big league, starts throwing the way he can with the stuff that he possesses. I mean, there are guys in this bullpen that can make this an effective back end. And if Adam Ottavino ever allows a run again, which I'm not sure will ever happen.
Nope.
I don't think so. I mean, it's, you know, there are pieces there that you can see why this team could be good, even in the bullpen next year. And that's been the problem, as we mentioned over the first few minutes of this podcast. But especially lately, it's just so hard as a GM to try to figure out who is going to be a guy you can count on to throw you some relief innings the next year. It really is. It's so volatile.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's the most inexact science of putting together a major league roster.
Yeah.
And the Rockies, you know, it stretches this season. The Rockies bullpen has looked terrific.
Yeah, I mean,
and it stretches. It's looked like a traditional Rockies bullpen.
Oh, and there's some guys who have been with the Rockies who are now effective major league relievers other places. You know, you got your Will Harris's, your Chaz Rose, your Jeff Manships.
Yeah,
you know, guys who have not just getting out of Colorado has helped them, but you know, there were guys who went to the Will Harris wasn't good when he initially went to Houston, but then the next year turned it around, and now he was an All-Star this year.
There was a very underrated stretch of bad Dano doubting in which and it was basically just everybody that the Rockies either got from or lost to the Astros. But Will Harris, Jeff Manship, Colin McHugh, those three really stand out as dudes who just turned really, really good the moment they left.
Yes.
You know, like that was a it's not just the normal. The Rockies are atrocious at identifying talent in the draft or whatever. That was really, I mean, guys at the major league level who just the second they left the realm of O'Dowd, they really got good.
Well,
really
it's funny. And Manship, when he left in 2013, went to the Phillies and threw 20 games for them in 2014 at an ERA over 6.5.
Dude boat.
Jeff Dude Boat. And then he went to the Indians and got in with the pitcher whisperer Mickey Callaway and put together a 0.92 ERA in 32 appearances in 2015. This year's ERA is just over 3 in 38 appearances. Yeah. Mickey Callaway
is
what he's
fun.
Doing.
Those guys are always fun to look back on. But
there's been one problem over the last 11 games or so. There's been one more problem over the last week or so, and that is what we're going to call in a segment we'd like to call the Parra problem.
The Parra problem.
The Parra problem.
The Parra problem.
Gerardo Parra signed a big-time deal with the Rockies in the offseason. 3 years, I believe, $27 million. And he has been bad.
Not good.
Not good.
He's not been good.
But bad. He just came off the DL in his first action since mid-June. He has played 5 games, and in that time, he has 4 hits. And when I saw that, I didn't believe it. He's 4-for-22 with 6 strikeouts and no walks, which is not surprising because let's go with some of these like awful stats for Gerardo Parra. So he is on pace to put together the worst walk rate in Rockies franchise history, which say that sentence 3 times fast, by a long shot. He is taking a walk every 68 plate appearances this year. And that's not just the worst mark in Rockies history. It would be the worst mark since Alfredo Griffin had 4 walks in 442 plate appearances for the 1984 Toronto Blue Jays.
Old Alfredo Griffin.
4 walks in 442 plate appearances for Alfredo Griffin. And
Gerardo Parra really
is going to put up the worst mark since then. And it goes back a lot of ways. Really, since he got traded to Baltimore last year, he had a really great first half of the season with Milwaukee last year, got traded to Baltimore at the deadline, and then was pretty much been trashed ever since then. Since August 1st of last year, among all outfielders in Major League Baseball that have at least 500 plate appearances, Gerardo Parra has the third worst OPS at .650. Only the very, very light hitting Billy Burns and Ben Revere have worse marks. His on base percentage in that time is the worst among all outfielders as well, a paltry .267 mark, a full 0.001 of a point better than Jay Bruce, who is the worst or the next worst on the list at .277. I mean, he has to play because the Rockies are paying him to do so, but my God, everything that he has done over the last year or so has made him look like one of the worst hitters in all of baseball. He's not patient. He's not getting any hits, not getting any home runs at all. He only has 5 home runs this year in 271 plate appearances. That's a .670 OPS, one of the worst marks in baseball for a guy who has at least 250 plate appearances. He's not doing anything at home in terms of hitting for power. He's doing literally less than nothing on the road. What do you do with Gerardo Parra, Tyler?
I want to publicly atone for something because as everyone knows, we ruined Purple Row. And but I also we've brought such a high level of discourse to Colorado Rockies baseball and especially Twitter.
I don't think so.
On May 9th, Gerardo Parra went 3-for-5 with a pair of doubles in a 10-5 loss to the Arizona Diamondbacks at Coors Field. And on that day, he was batting .298, .308, .458 for the season. And I tweeted the words, quote, "I really like Gerardo Parra." And I want to apologize to all of you for saying something that would look so terrible later. Also, the 10 of you who favorited that need to apologize, too.
Yeah. Because
we got 10 faves.
It's also your fault.
But Matt Gross, who we know is no longer a Rockies fan, he was the first one to say, no, your opinion is wrong and you are terrible.
Yeah.
So I apologize.
We always love hearing, so please keep telling that to us.
So I apologize to all of you for saying that I liked Gerardo Parra at one time. But I feel good to get that off my chest. But this is the issue because there was a line where you said he has to play because they're paying him this much money, and that's true, and I agree with it. But the Rockies have backed themselves into a tough corner in which they promoted David Dahl, who will never get out again, they now have 3 very good outfielders, and one of them is not Gerardo Parra.
No. I'm not even sure he's better than any guys who are sitting in AAA or AA right now, considering Raimel Tapia is down in AAA. Jordan Patterson's having a great year in AAA. I don't think Gerardo Parra is better than those guys right now.
No, me neither. So I don't know what you do with him, especially because, you know, the money that you signed him to is not insignificant. So if you tried to go the route of, okay, we'll deal a guy who, you know, has a couple of gold gloves to his name, can provide a little bit of offensive dynamism from time to time, maybe. You know, He's it's a 4-year deal. I mean, it's a 3-year deal with a team option for 2019, but Gerardo Parra is set to make $8 million next year, $10 million in 2018, and then the team option is $12 million in 2019 or a $1.5 million buyout, and I think we know which way that's looking right now. But I just don't see suitors lining up to deal for Gerardo Parra.
No, and...
And he's 29. Like, we're supposed to be getting the best version of Gerardo Parra right now.
Yeah.
He's in his prime.
It's weird. You wonder why... The deal was made in the first place, and we mentioned it when they actually signed him, but like, oh well, he's a Rockies killer. He's done well at Coors Field. Look at the numbers. He did well against the Rockies early in his career, but really his numbers at Coors weren't great. His numbers against the Rockies over the last previous few seasons weren't great. We always felt like he was that guy that always kicked the Rockies' ass, but it really wasn't necessarily true. But then, okay, that's fine, whatever. He's still a decent hitter, gap to gap guy. Can live in left center and right center. Hit, you know, 30 to 40 doubles, whatever. He's not doing that. And it's like, oh, well, okay, well, his defense is really good. He won a Gold Glove a few years back. He was rated as one of the best, you know, outfielders in terms of, I think, UZR in 2013 or something along those lines. Then he won a Gold Glove. Well, his defense has been crap this year. I mean, he misplayed a ball horribly yesterday
really
into a triple.
Bad.
I mean, he's got 4 errors in the outfield this year, which is in 68 games, which is really, really tough.
Really difficult to do.
That's tough to do that.
That is really bad.
It's his first year with 4 errors in a couple of seasons, and he's only played 68 games. He's not showing off anything that we would be okay with right now in terms of offensively, defensively, plate discipline. It's been a monstrously horrible year, but we kind of could see it coming. I mean, he started off the career decently strong. He was never a big power guy. Last year, he had 14 home runs, 9 of those in Milwaukee, and that was a career high. He's only reached double digits twice. He's not going to steal a lot of bases. He never had a high OBP, and yet the Rockies committed a lot of money to him. Now, I can't imagine they thought his plate discipline would crater the way that it has. I mean, his previous high in terms of plate appearances per walk was 29. That was last year only with Baltimore. So really it has been a full season. His worst plate appearances per walk was 21, which is combined with last year. And he's up to 68 now, plate appearances per walk. I'm not sure what the hell is going on there, whether it's coaching, whether it's stubbornness, whether it's something is wrong with Gerardo Parra. Something is absolutely broken with that kid.
The thing that's so weird is it's not as if, like, he goes up and there was an at bat yesterday where there was not a single pitch in the zone and he just waved at everything totally helplessly. Like, there doesn't even appear to be the hint of a thought in his mind of like, maybe I should take a look at some of these. Maybe I should make sure that some of these are going to be in the strike
zone.
Maybe
I should take a pitch. Nah.
Like, how?
That's
how you get to this point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is because...
The last time he took a walk in a game was June 3rd.
And to be fair, he missed a lot of time after that. But I feel like had he played every game after that anyway, we still might be saying the last time he took a walk was June 3rd.
But you want to know the funny part was the pitcher who walked him was Drew Pomeranz.
Oh, of course it was. Of course it was. Man, they really united the forces of evil with Drew Pomeranz going to the Red Sox. I was totally okay with that.
Just a wah.
And it also, I mean, it brought out all of the good forces of evil. It brought out like the dickish Padres fans who were some reason like arrogantly taunting us that they got a good pitching prospect back who's 19 years old, which is adorable.
Yeah.
Drew Pomeranz, by the way, has been pretty well a dog's breakfast ever since he went to the Red Sox. 5 starts there, an 0-2 record of 5.26 ERA. You know. It's pretty much Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah, and that big time pitching prospect they got is, you know, an ERA of 5 in the Midwest League. He's what?
Yeah.
Struck out 12 and 17 and 2/3.
But don't worry, his prospect ranking is higher than Jeff Hoffman's was.
Padres fans suck.
So I don't know what the solution is. I mean, right now, Gerardo Parra has no business being in a lineup for the Rockies. You know, because the options that you have out there right now are that much better. I mean, obviously with Carlos Gonzalez not being healthy over the last couple of weeks, maybe that's a reason why Gerardo Parra gets a little bit more of a look. But all things equal, Charlie Blackmon, David Dahl, and Carlos Gonzalez are your 3 best outfielders.
And it's not close. Yeah.
And it's not close.
Yeah. I gotta say, I don't know. I have been loving Charlie Blackman this year. I don't know why. This year, I'm all in the Chuck Nasty train. I have no.
Yeah.
He has been.
Yeah.
So much fun to watch this year in every possible way. He's hitting .317, which would be a career high. The OPS of .875, which would be 75 points higher than his career high. 15 bombs, 14 steals, 24 doubles, playing a really good outfield. He's improved his walk rate every year. He's pretty much kept his strikeout rate level every year. He's improved in pretty much every possible thing.
So let's take that the next logical step. He is your most valuable and best trade piece in the offseason.
Correct.
Especially because of the fact that you have a true center fielder in David Dahl, who, as of right now, looks like he is the best case scenario that anyone forecasted him to be.
The greatest player in the history of baseball.
The best player to ever lace him up in the history of the game. The future hit king. More
the once
than likely,
and future hit king, yes.
Surpassing Ichiro as the one and true hit king. That is still the way that it looks going into this offseason, is that Chuck is your best and most valuable trade piece because you have somebody already not even waiting in the wings. You have somebody now waiting, you know, stage left.
Waiting, you know, 70 feet that way.
Yeah, exactly. Who is Chuck, but like a better version of Chuck. And Chuck has turned himself into a very good baseball player. You know, we've talked about this a lot before. The whole Chuck Nasty thing was kind of annoying because it was, you know, in April of 2014 when Denver sports media pretends to pay attention to the Rockies for a time. It was just, oh, look at this guy. He's so wacky with his beard and he drives his Jeep Grand Cherokee and yada, yada. And it was like the cult of Charlie Blackman. But Charlie Blackman has turned himself into a very good all-around baseball player.
And a great leadoff hitter.
And a great leadoff hitter. Obviously a good clubhouse guy. And the Rockies very much are aware of that, but this outfield situation is not tenable for 2017.
One of my favorite stats from Charlie Blackman over the last few years, in 2014, he swung at 30% of first pitches. So he's a very free swinger, didn't take a lot of pitches, even though he was hitting pretty high in the lineup most of the time. The last 2 years combined, he has swung at 8% of first pitches, from 30% to 8%.
That is very impressive.
Yeah, and that's why he's seen his OBP go from 335 to 347 to 376 this season. But you're right, Charlie Blackman is going into a second year of arbitration this year, and this can open up something else. Do the Rockies try to sign him to an extension? Because they know they have Nolan Arenado. He is coming up on his second year of arbitration as well. Do they try? Then they got to pay him eventually because he's only making $5 million this year, which he's going to worth probably five times that a year at least. Yeah. At this point, with that on the horizon, they're going to have to probably prioritize Nolan Arenado's big time contract, which will come up very, very soon. Do they try to keep Blackman in house with an extension?
That'd be interesting. And then it turns Parra into the guy that you try to move. You're not going to get nearly as much back, obviously, for Parra as you would for Charlie Blackman at this stage, especially because Chuck still has some time under team control, and the deal is so much more expensive for a much worse player in Gerardo Parra. But you feel pretty damn good about your outfield if eventually it's Blackman in left, Dahl in center, Cargo in right. I don't know. That is a very good question, actually. I don't want to say it would surprise me, but given the money that's tied into Gerardo Parra, you would think that they would be more likely to stick with him and deal somebody that they can get the highest value out of. But that being said, you know, they ate the Jose Reyes money.
Yeah.
So it does appear to be about putting the best product on the field.
I mean, this team is making the right strides at the right time, and you have to imagine they want Charlie Blackman to be a big part of that next year, especially considering how much he has improved over the last 3 years. Now, obviously, that will table off, and eventually diminishing returns will start to take effect with every baseball player, with every person, really, because, you know, we all end up dead. But do we see Charlie Blackman as the guy we can see going forward? Because right now, he is turning himself into one of those franchise cornerstones you can build around.
Yeah.
But he's 30.
I mean, so is Parra, to be fair.
Yeah, Absolutely, he is. He's totally great. You know,
Parr's the same.
No, Chuck did just turn 30 in July.
That's a crazy thing. Is Charlie Blackman still feels like kind of new.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's actually older than Gerardo Parra.
Yeah.
Which is a little strange. Funny. About a year older than Gerardo Parra. Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I mean, if I had my druthers, I mean, if this was the show and I had to figure out the best route forward, to me, dealing Chuck is the best route forward because he brings back so much more in return than Parra does. But then you got to throw Gerardo Parra out there every day, potentially next season.
Out there,
that sounds
to the wolves?
That sounds horrendous. Well, like, you know, depending on how things go.
Like into Mordor?
Maybe.
Okay. That's cool.
Do you know that Charlie Blackman's middle name is Cobb, like Ty Cobb?
I did know that, and Cobb County, Georgia.
Yeah, but he was actually born in Dallas.
I know, but he's a Georgia Tech guy.
He is. He went to North Gwinnett High School in Suwanee, Georgia. He also went to something called Young Harris College before he went to the Georgia Institute of Technology.
I prefer my Harris's old.
Yeah, I like old Harris's. I like Calvin Harris's. I like Will Harris's. I like Roger Maris's.
I like Harris Teeter.
Speaking of Georgia. So, yeah, basically we don't have any idea of what's going on. But in that same conversation, let's just talk about David Dahl for a minute.
Okay.
Let's just step outside of ourselves for a second and appreciate just how ridiculous this has been so far for David Dahl. Dahl is, as of today, level with the longest hitting streak in major league history to start a career. 17 games. David Dahl is 24 for 67 in his major league career so far. That's 17 games since he was called up to the big leagues with a hit for David Dahl. Now, that sounds impressive. But then take into account that he also got hits in 15 of the 16 games that he played in AAA. And that makes it 32 of 33 games of the two highest levels of baseball, arguably in the world, obviously the major leagues, and AAA there too, that David Dahl has gotten a hit. It's not going to continue forever, but holy crap, how much fun has this been to watch?
It's pretty stupid. He has been pretty much everything we could possibly have imagined David Dahl. He is the 80-grade scenario we thought we could possibly get with David Dahl so far.
Yeah, it's been sexy.
I mean, yeah, and it's not just, oh, well, he has 20 strikeouts, 17 games. Whatever. That's fine.
Right. And only 4 walks.
Yeah. He's 7 for 17 against lefties. He's hitting .412 against lefties.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got the 3 homers, as you mentioned. I mean, he's already got 3 triples. I mean, he's already tied for 3rd on the team in triples.
I mean, the Coors effect is there with him. He's only hitting .343 with a .978 OPS on the road, compared to .375 with a .1006 OPS at home. So there's obviously things to be concerned about there.
Coors.
You know, two of his home runs have been on the road, so Coors there too.
Yeah. I mean, he's hitting .294 with runners in scoring position. In games that are close and late, he's hitting .364. In one-run games, he's hitting .417. I mean, you can keep going on with this kid.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The whole thing, I mean, just take some time to appreciate it because it is insane. The stuff that you're watching him do is you will likely never see again. We've only seen it in Rockies history one time, and that was Juan Pierre, of all people, who started his career with a 16-game hitting streak.
Much different guys.
Much different.
Yeah.
But David Dahl now level for the longest hitting streak to start a career in Major League history.
And that was a mark that stood alone for 75 years. Chuck Delano for the Reds in 1941.
I like whoever tweeted in at us yesterday, Crosley, in response to that. That was a very good tweet.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, David Dahl, I didn't expect to see him here at this point. I thought the Rockies would go the Trevor Story route, let him finish out the season healthy in AAA, really get his confidence up by just mashing against PCL pitching. But, man, have I been proven wrong in that regard, and very happily.
Thank
so.
Thank God. Yeah.
Yeah, because he has been a hell of a lot of fun to watch. So, yeah, it's been good. We didn't really have any analysis of David Dahl, just David Dahl, he's very good.
Yeah. We used to talk about how cool he is, yeah.
Yeah, we could. We can talk about how handsome he is, but that'll be a whole hour in itself, at least, obviously.
I mean.
Good Lord. So I think should that send us to Nolan? Should we go to Nolan on that?
I think.
Okay.
I think it sends us to Nolan.
Since we've talked about one great player, let's talk about another great player, and we'll talk to him, in fact. Nolan Arenado won 3 straight gold gloves to begin his major league career, the only player to do that in baseball history outside of Ichiro, who came over to the major leagues in his prime after a fantastic career with the Oryx Buffaloes in Japan.
He's only 25.
And Nolan's only 25 years old and continues just mashing and hitting sweet dongers. And, God, he's so much fun. And I really like this conversation with Nolan. It was good to get a chance to talk to Nolan, and you'll hear that right now.
At this stage, kind of still experiencing some firsts in your career, and it's at this stage the first time at this point in the season where you guys are really hanging in. What's this feel like? I mean, being able to come to the park every day, I know that you're really playing for something.
Yeah, well, it feels good, that we can compete. Obviously, we feel that we can hang with any team that we've played, and, obviously our starting pitching has set the tone for us, and that's where it all starts. But we're playing good ball, and, we're only 4 games out of the wild card, 8 out of the division, and we know we haven't played our best ball yet, but we're playing good baseball, and it's been fun, and it's nice to look at the scoreboard and see what other teams are doing in a way because we know we have a chance.
You guys, this homestand comes with such a different atmosphere and such different energy because you meet 2 teams you're chasing down, the Dodgers and Marlins, and then a really good team comes in today in the Rangers. What does that energy do for you guys when you come to the park? There's 40,000 people here yesterday. It just feels different. For you guys in this room, what does that mean when you head out on the field and you know that? Not only is it different for what you're playing for, but it seems like compared to August games last few seasons, this is way different, I would imagine.
Yeah. No, it feels good. It feels really good. It's nice to know that our fans are there for us. I think they're starting to get the clue that, we're kind of in it, and the couple years past, we haven't been in it at all. So I think the fans are understanding that, hey, you never know what can happen here. And we need that support. We feed off them. We love the energy. If you see a lot of the good teams in baseball, their fan base is usually a big part of that, their home field advantage. And we need that. And we need that with them. And it's nice. It's nice coming to ballpark, seeing a packed house, especially on a Sunday day game. There's a lot of other things people could be doing, but they're coming to our game. So it means a lot. And it's something that, it pushes me to play even harder for them. And, like I said, we have a chance.
Like you said, starting pitching has really been kind of the key to it. And it seems like, when John gets a ball, obviously yesterday a little tough for him, but when he gets a ball, when Tyler gets a ball, all these guys, they bring what feels like a different mentality coming in that you feel like you have a stopper, I would imagine, rather than some of these slides the last couple of seasons where it just felt like nobody was ever there to put an end to it. What has that been like, being able to go behind somebody that you know is more than likely going to go out and give you 6-7 innings and really give you a chance?
Well, it's been great. It's been great. Knowing that, we have a guy like, obviously Rick Gray had a rough stout, rough outing, yesterday. But, unfortunately those things happen, and he's going to bounce back like we expect him to. But, we lost in New York, the Mets, even though we lost the last day, and, we were playing the Dodgers the first game, and I knew Gray was throwing, and it gives you a self-confidence. Like, okay, we got Gray throwing. This is good. We got a good chance to win this game. Even whoever they're throwing, we still feel good about ourselves. Because we know if he's on his game, you never know what could happen. So it's a great feeling. All our starting pitching has been good. They're competing, and they're giving us a chance, and they're giving our bullpen a chance, giving our bullpen rest, too. And that's a big thing, because we're not exposing them as much as we were in the past, and that's a big thing for us.
Trevor goes down, and since then, the guys have really responded well. Is that at all surprising in that you lose, obviously a guy who's played really, really good defensive shortstop, but has added a lot of pop and been a pretty good performer in terms of the production he's brought offensively, which maybe I don't think a whole lot of people would have expected him to replace Tulo almost at that same level. But since he went down, guys have stepped up, you've hung in. Is that surprising at all that, you lose that production, but it's still you've stayed on this role?
Story is a huge impact on our team, and it hurts. But, if you see a lot of the good teams, like, for instance, the Dodgers, whoever, they have guys that go down all the time, but yet their pitching keeps them in ball games and it gives them a chance to win. And if our pitching does that, it really doesn't matter who goes down, because we got a chance to win the ball game. But it does hurt us, because we know how impact Story is on defense side and the offensive side. But, we have guys that are stepping up with Danny and Adames, and they're playing good baseball. And if we could keep pitching and keep having those guys keep having quality at-bats and carry the load as much as we can for Story, good things will happen.
At this stage for you as a leader in this clubhouse, mean, obviously there was, you know, the game in San Diego earlier this year where you were getting guys fired up. You hit the home run yesterday. That comes in a big spot. And you're an emotional guy. You're a guy who's out there on the front line getting everybody kind of off of, you know, if there is a Schneid, getting them off of a Schneid. When it comes to this stage in a season, first time that you guys have experienced a what feels like a postseason run in your career, what changes with that? I mean, does that take on more meaning? Does it take on more immediacy to be one of those guys who's out front leading when you know that this is so close? You're only four games out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to keep doing my thing. I'm going to keep working hard, keep being there for the guys. You know, obviously, you know, I want to perform because I want to help the team win, you know, and I think we all have to understand we have to play our spot. But, you know, we got to clear our heads. You know, that's something, you know, I have to learn. You know, we all have to learn is that we're in a race now. So when you lose, you got to move on quick, you know, because we got to get ready for the next day. And, you know, obviously we lost a really bad game yesterday, but we move on. We got the Rangers in town, got a tough series, but we got to get ready. Be ready to play every single day, and I think that's what we're doing, and we're having success right now.
Last thing for you. You guys, right now, it feels like you're competing maybe a year ahead of schedule. I think everybody figured 2017 and beyond was going to be a really good stretch. How do you guys take the long view, or do you think about that at all? I mean, the fact that you've got so much talent, even just the guys that have come up this season that have already been able to contribute, but there's so many guys in Albuquerque. There's so many guys in Hartford. How do you guys look at what opens up next year and beyond in terms of, you know, you're in it right now, but this could be a regular feeling for a while?
Yeah, I mean, it feels good. You know, obviously, we know that, you know, we've always heard that, but, you know, for the guys that are in here, they want to hear that, you know, they want to hear about us being good now, you know, it's, you can't look to the future, you know, you got to focus on now, and we're focused on that, and we want to prove people wrong, and we feel good about our team and what we have here, and, you know, obviously, we know we have a lot of pieces that can help us win, and, but, you know, if we keep playing where we are, those pieces are going to help us this year, and that's what we need, and we're very happy with what's going on. But, you know, we're not content. You know, being average isn't very good. You know, being average in the major league doesn't get you nowhere. So, you know, we're trying to get to the postseason, and we know we have to play above that.
Well, thanks, man. Best of luck. Keep it rolling.
No problem. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Nolan Arenado, the Rockies all-world everything. Nolan's numbers this season are as good as the numbers he has put up anywhere in his professional career, and especially in his major league career so far this year. Through 113 games, he's batting .287, .361, .569. He's got 30 home runs yet again, 92 runs batted in.
Leading the league.
Leading the league. 27 doubles this year as well, and he's also tripled three times. And Nolan struck out 65 times this year. He's walked 51 times, which is very impressive. There are conversations that we're going to have about Nolan, especially if the Rockies somehow get a little hot, get in the mix, get on a run. There are conversations that we will have about Nolan in postseason awards. Anthony, go.
Well, I think that if the Rockies finish around 500 or so, if they end the season well, you know, they don't make the playoffs. I don't think that's imperative for them. For this to happen. But I think people on the national scale understand well enough right now the brilliance of Nolan Arenado, whether they've seen it in a highlight, whether they've seen it when he's playing their team. I think pundits realize that the Rockies have something special, and it's not just a Coors creation kind of thing. They see the defense, they see the approach, they see the homers, the RBI for the old school folk, but they see the approach getting better too. Last year he walked every 20 plate appearances. This year he's cut that in half. He's improving in every single way. And I think if the Rockies do finish within a grasp of 500, I think Nolan Arenado is going to make a serious, serious run at the NL MVP. Even if they
and
don't make
not?
The playoffs.
Yeah, you should. The thing about Nolan, I think we've all shouted into the void enough that people get it now. Yeah. You know, because one of the Rockies' biggest allies in this fight has been the MLB social media people, because they have started to get on to Nolan really over the last two seasons.
Because he's very giftable.
Yeah, exactly. Because Nolan fits himself very perfectly into their brand of social media. Because yeah, he's just gifts galore. That's Nolan in a nutshell. So I think he will be in that conversation, but it is somewhat imperative that they hang around. I mean, if the Rockies go out and lose 11 straight now,
it's not going to matter.
Then it's not going to matter. They have to be in that conversation because, you know, oddly enough, they have to be in that conversation because, you know, back in the 90s, like, it didn't really matter if a team was good. A guy could still win the MVP.
Bryce Harper won the MVP last year and the Nats didn't make the playoffs. But he
true. But they were there until the end.
Players in the National
right.
League. If you look at just straight wins above replacement right now, which a lot of people are looking at now, of course, everybody has their different metrics. And it's not the only thing that goes into it. Right now, Nolan Arenado is third behind Chris Bryant and Corey Seager in the wins above replacement. But the candidates would be Bryant, Seager, Rizzo, Daniel Murphy is going to be in that conversation well.
Definitely.
But that you look at the good teams, nobody really stands out on a lot of other squads. Even the Marlins, who are having a surprising year. Giancarlo Stanton's not having a huge year.
Right.
Nobody really on the Pirates or the Cardinals. The Giants don't really have one guy they can look to and say, hey, he's an MVP candidate. I would say the short list is Bryant, Seager, Arenado, Rizzo, and Daniel Murphy. I would say those five guys will finish in the top five of the National League MVP race. And I think Nolan can very easily finish it within the top three, even if the Rockies don't make the playoffs.
I agree. Well, man.
One of my favorite things about Nolan Arenado before we send it to Purple Row BK, his batting average each of the last three seasons as we sit here on August 12th is 287. Every year, 287 in 2014, 287 in 2015, 287 right now in 2016. But the OPS every year, 828 to 898 to 930.
Yeah, that's
He's kept
fun.
The average steady, and he has improved his OPS demonstrably every single year.
That's fun. Yeah, because he's getting on base more, and he punishes the ball basically every time he contacts it. Oh, I love that kid.
Yes.
I love him. He was fun to talk to. Nolan Arenado, cast your ballot for him.
Yeah.
One guy who you will not be voting for National League MVP is Brian Kilpatrick of PurpleRoad.com. And not because of anything against Brian. He's just not a baseball player in the National League. You know, that generally prevents you from winning National League MVP. Am I correct in that assessment? Do you think it's a strong take?
No.
You know, I mean, I think he should get some love, but I just don't think he's going to win it.
No.
At Purple Row BK joins the show next. It's been quite some time since we've caught up with the head honcho of Purple Row. That's one Brian Kilpatrick. And it's also been since we ruined his website that we talked to Brian. And
that's why we haven't been talking
to Brian. Yeah, I guess that's why we haven't done it. Hi, Brian. Sorry for ruining your website.
You know, it just, I can't believe the nerve you guys have to ruin my website and all of our credibility and then not even have me on the show to talk about it for like a year.
Unbelievable. These guys. since we are having you on right as of this moment and we have yet to record the rest of the show today, I am going to give you a choose your own adventure. You either get to lead into or follow Nolan Arenado today. Which would you prefer?
Follow.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay. Man. You want to be his protection in the order is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Okay.
Look, I know that I can give a better interview than he can.
The gauntlet has been thrown down. Wow. Man. Okay.
No, I love Nolan, though, so don't tell him I said that.
Okay. Well, we know he doesn't listen to the podcast, obviously.
Hey, Nolan, he's on the other line right now, Brian. You're screwed.
We have the paternity test, and here's what it said. Let's get started with some news that we got yesterday, which is the Rockies' first base situation appears to have been thrown into a bit of chaos as we near the midway point in August. And Mark Reynolds took a swing yesterday, went down to a knee, and then departed the game. And Thomas Harding of MLB.com said later that there was a Hammett issue that Mark Reynolds has been trying to play through that just hasn't gotten any better. Brian, what's the latest? What have you heard? And where do the Rockies go from here at first base?
Well, it says, according to Harding and other reports, it sounds like Reynolds is headed for the DL, which is unfortunate for multiple reasons. Number one, the guy's played really good defense. Like, you can see it with your eyes. You can see it with advanced metrics, which rate him as a couple of runs above average. You know, he's just been really good over there, which, as we all know, is supremely important for the Rockies because of all the ground balls they get, et cetera, et cetera. Narrative, but it's true.
Don't say that he's been good on Twitter, though, because you will be shouted down by the masses that he has not actually been good. But
yeah,
I think he's been good.
Yeah, he has been on defense, and he's a league average bat offensively, but, you know, it's a little bit more important for the Rockies right now with Story out. They need someone who can pose as some sort of a power threat from the right-handed side of the plate. especially because Ryan Rayburn's just been god awful for what, three and a half months now.
Yeah.
So it comes as a big blow to the Rockies, who, and I can't believe we're having this conversation again, but who are maybe contenders, maybe not. I don't know. Nobody knows. And that's probably going to dictate what they do about it.
I mean, is there anybody even on the roster that's almost ready to come and play first base? I mean, we can't convert Corey Dickerson to first base anymore, guys. So is our only option Ben Paulson right now? And to be fair, Paulson has turned his season around a little bit in AAA over the last couple of months. He's hitting .309, five homers, blah, blah. We've seen that story. Is he the only option we have right now?
Yeah, the boring and the most Rockies option is definitely Ben Paulson.
Nice.
I don't want to like rail on the dude too much, because he's, when you look at his career numbers in the majors and compare them to what Reynolds has done this season, they're pretty much the same. So, you know, I have little doubt that he could come in and provide the same type of production that Reynolds can, but you know, what are the Rockies going to do late in games with a tough lefty on the mound? I mean, those guys might eat Paulson alive, and you know, we've seen it happen over and over again. So bringing up Paulson doesn't address the right-handed hitter issue. The only thing they could probably do is maybe give Ryan Rayburn a little more playing time to see if he can get right under that circumstance. And I don't love that option, even though it probably is the most realistic one. One thing that they could do if they decide to stay in the organization is they've had all this talk about moving Carlos Gonzalez to first base. They've been talking about it for months, years, maybe. I swear I heard it come up last year, maybe even the year before, too.
Well, more than likely, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be a thing. And maybe they give Steven Cardullo a shot. Maybe they're motivated by the success of David Peralta, who the Diamondbacks signed out of Indy Ball. Cardullo's been really good in AAA. He's 28. Sure, he hasn't played affiliated ball above rookie ball. He was in Indy Ball for the previous four seasons before this year, but he's hitting really well in AAA. I like his approach. Maybe he can come up and be the right-handed bat that they need in the outfield and move Cargo to first base. That's a kind of a dark horse option that I kind of would like to see myself, but who knows?
He fits well into the handsome Rockies category, which disturbs me. I remember the first time I came across his headshot on MILB.com this year, and I was like, "Ooh, I'm gonna lose myself in this young man's eyes here, Steven." Steven is a Florida State product, and ironically enough, he actually was a D-backs draft selection back in 2010. He was a 24th round pick, but you mentioned Cargo, and that sort of segues us into our next topic of conversation, which is something that Anthony and I have discussed. The Gerardo Parra situation is not getting better, and it's not going away.
The Parra problem.
But as of right now, he's in the lineup, it appears, on a regular basis. Does the idea of putting Carlos Gonzalez at first base then free up something with this log jam in the outfield? Because obviously David Dahl has to be in there, Charlie Blackman has to be in there, and Carlos Gonzalez has to be in there, and yet somehow, you know, they're paying Gerardo Parra a decent amount of money. He's going to find his way in, you know, and it spares us from having to see the poor ritualistic sacrifice of major league outfielder Daniel Descalso. So what is there a scenario where the first base problem can also create some clarity to the outfield issue if perhaps Cargo gets a look there?
Well, it could, yeah, especially when you're facing mostly right-handed pitchers, but God, that is so many left-handed batters in the lineup.
Yeah,
so many.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it does create a spot for Parra and loosens the logjam a little bit, but it's far from an optimal lineup, especially when Parra's walked four times in 900 plate appearances or whatever it is.
Like, it's pretty amazing, yeah.
Been so bad on offense. He had a couple of at-bats yesterday. He had one at-bat where he struck out and didn't see a pitch in the zone, and that's pretty indicative of how things have gone for him this year. But, I mean, to answer your question, yes, but also that sucked.
That is a factual statement.
It's a fair way to put that. Let's shift a little bit to the starting rotation. So basically, this team right now, we have said that since the beginning of the year that we wanted this team to show strides like we saw in 2006 when the guys were gelling as a unit and then they were able to take the next step, win about 10 or so more games, and then 2007 happened. Well, through 115 games, this team has the exact same record as they did in 2006. And that's a lot of that is due to the starting rotation. What has been your favorite thing that you have seen from rotation this year, whether it's a player, whether it's an approach, or what have you seen from the rotation from the guys that you have liked that you haven't seen in a long time for the Rockies?
They're, despite the numbers, like, you know, the sheer amount of earned runs given up, these guys are not afraid whatsoever to pitch at Coors Field. Like, they're not. You can see it in their approach. You can Tyler Chatwood maybe being the exception because he's walked so many hitters there, but like John Gray, Tyler Anderson, Chad Bettis, and of course De La Rosa because he's always been good there, but just their approach to pitching at Coors Field, it's just, I mean, you don't see all the nibbling that we've seen for the past 5 years. Like, you don't see the weird body language, like, just some of those things you can actually see and then go look up later and quantify. It's awesome how much of a positive stride they've taken at Coors Field in particular.
Tyler Chatwood, by the way, ever since that start against the Rays in which he gave up 7 runs on 8 hits over 3 innings, he's now only given up 6 runs at home over his last 3 starts, and that encompasses 17 2/3, so there are some strides being made there. And he's been so – I mean, his numbers on the road still – 9 starts, 6-0, 1.30 ERA. I mean, that's how good he's been. But, you know, we discussed this a little bit a couple of weeks ago. John Gray is the best propaganda tool that the Rockies have ever had at this stage, because now the guys like Jeff Hoffman, the guys like Kyle Freeland, Antonio Senzatella, Herman Marquez, those guys can look at John Gray and say, that guy's doing it. Why can't I do it if he's doing it? And that seems to be the culture that Zach Wilson, the Rockies director of player development, and Jeff Breidich have wanted to create for a long time. I mean, at this stage, Brian, like, I feel like we've passed the point where we're trying to attempt to be cautious about our excitement with John Gray. Like, I think now we're just full on John Gray fanatics. Like, I sleep next to a picture of him. Should we temper things at all, or have we finally reached the point where we can say, all right, this kid's legit, and this is what they've been trying to do?
Oh, he's absolutely legit. Like, there's no doubt about it. His last start was kind of bad, of course, but, you know, everyone gets some of those, and, you know, whatever. It shouldn't take away from the overall fact that that guy's just been nails. And the thing I really like about him, and by the way, a lot of this, I think, comes from the approach that Daryl Scott, the AAA pitching coach, has instilled in some of these guys. And that just makes me excited as hell that Hoffman, Marquez, Freeland are all in AAA right now learning from this guy and getting good info. And really, as cliche as it sounds, and as much as a certain segment of the fan base doesn't want to hear it, it's process over results. It really is. It has to be, especially with the unique situation the Rockies are in. But John Gray encompasses all of that because he's like, he overcomes adversity in almost every single start, it seems like. He gives up a couple of runs in the first inning, gives up a homer. He's done it multiple times where after that he walks in, starts striking a bunch of guys out, utilizes his secondary stuff really well. You know, it's just the process, just watching him pitch and watching his thought process and how he attacks hitters has been just awesome. And that's kind of what tells me that this is for real. Like, you know, all these good things he's doing at the highest level are real. So no, don't temper your excitement. Be excited.
Well, speaking of process over results, that we're now in the fourth year of Walt Weiss's tenure as manager of the Colorado Rockies. And I asked this question to Richard from Rockies Zingers last week, but with this team taking strides that they haven't taken in the last few years, do you think Walt Weiss's job is safer at this point? Because we haven't really had one of those big-time Rockies Twitter meltdowns of, oh, my God, why did Walt Weiss do this? I'm sure you have in the comments section. We don't try to venture there as much as we possibly can. But are we seeing improvements in Walt Weiss's in-game strategy, or is this just he's getting better talent around him and they're making him look good?
Well, make no mistake, our mentions are still lit every day with hindsight about how
you gotta stay
Walt Weiss screwed this
ruined
up
Western civilization.
Whatever, but
did you know he coached in high school?
He was a high school coach before he was the Rockies manager, as Anthony
did just
you
know
noted.
That? That
yeah,
that's
did
a
you
really
know that?
Interesting fact yeah. about Walt Weiss.
And did you guys know that Prince Fielder, forced into retirement, had the same amount of home runs as his father, Cecil Fielder, also a major leaguer?
Do you know in the 2006 draft? I'm sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. That is enough. No, just kidding. to answer your question, Weiss isn't any better of a manager, I don't think, like as far as in-game tactics and all that go now as he was 2-3 years ago. But he's a good manager. Like, he's a good development guy. I mean, obviously a lot of these young players have come along really, really well with him managing the team. I think he fits the team's strategy of, you know, trying to develop this top five farm system into a hopefully one day within the next year or two top five major league team. But now that this talent's here and the talent's grown and it's starting to manifest itself at the major league level, I still wonder if maybe someone else could come in and do a little bit better of a job now that the talent's there and assembled and they're starting to get a real big league roster put together. For a long time, I've always kind of wondered how much of an impact managers really have on wins and losses. I'm sure everyone else has wondered that too, but they're not going to win you a lot of games, but they sure can lose you a lot of games. And so that's what the Rockies need to look at as they go into 2017. Is this the guy who's going to avoid losing them some games? And is this the guy who, now that, you know, a lot of our talent is developed, is this the guy who should be leading our team? And that's what they got to look at. You know, the Rockies aren't big on making changes like that, but, you know, we don't really know Jeff Bridish as well as we knew Dan O'Dowd, so maybe he's got something different in mind.
Dan O'Dowd drafted Greg Reynolds before the Denver Broncos drafted Tim Tebow. I don't know if you guys know that.
Wow. Like, yeah. Before, like a year before?
Really makes you think. Before?
I think it was in the same round of the NBA draft that year. That one year when that happened.
They drafted Nikola Skidashvili before they draft.
I once saw him at Cherry Creek Mall. Brian, the Rockies will head into the offseason, likely not as a playoff team, but very well positioned for 2017. And we'll leave you on this. If you had to pick what the formula needs to be heading into 2017, at this stage, the rotation looks good. Somebody mentioned this in our ats yesterday, in our mentions on Twitter. This last little stretch, which has been brutal, at least you can pinpoint it's been one thing that's been brutal. It's been the bullpen that's been struggling. It hasn't been one of these stretches where just, oh, God, they can't get a hit in a crucial situation. Starting pitching has been a nightmare. The bullpen's been a nightmare. Management has been a nightmare, whatever. It's been one thing that's been rough. That seems like it's a step forward, but there are obviously issues across the board that can be addressed. What do you see as the most pressing things to get sorted out over the 2016 offseason going into 2017?
It's so hard to sit here and talk about how you should pour all these resources into relief pitching because it's all driven by small samples. It's such a small part of the game when you look at the whole gigantic picture, but yet you see a week like the Rockies have had this week, you see, you know, what happened in June, like when the Yankees were in town and all the bullpen falling apart during that stretch. And you just have to wonder where the team might be if they had a legit shutdown, eighth inning guy, ninth inning guy, doesn't matter because the best reliever should be used in the highest leverage situation, blah, blah, blah. So I guess I would like to see them, and admittedly, you know, this is bad of me, but I haven't looked at the free agent market in terms of relievers for next year. I don't know who's going to be available, but I would, the analyst in me hates this, but I would love to see them go get a shutdown reliever or two.
Are all the Chapman's a free agent?
Yeah, I don't know. That one.
Boone Logan's a free agent.
Yeah.
Look, if you can retain Boone Logan,
yeah, actually,
it's not that bad of an idea.
Yeah,
absolutely do it. He clearly has come into his own pitching here. Yeah, I would absolutely do it. But they've got to find a shutdown arm, and maybe Carlos Estevez develops into that next year. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But you know, there could even if they scout it properly, if they evaluate it properly, there could even be a guy who they could go get on a really cheap deal who blossoms into something amazing, like we see 35-year-old relievers do all the time.
Yeah.
So go find somebody who knows how to get big league hitters out, who knows what it takes, and hopefully everything else will kind of continue to blossom around it. But this team has a lot fewer weaknesses than people might think just looking at their record. And you can kind of see it in their run differential, by the way, which is positive at this point in the season. I think they're outscoring the opposition by 20 runs. So clearly, you know, it's not a fluky 500-ish team. Like it's a real 500-ish team who, with another year of development, is going to get better.
Oh man, it's so again, like we don't ever want to get excited about anything ever because you know, we're Rockies.
It's not how
fans,
that works.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, at this stage, the Rockies, their actual win percentage is a .487 mark at 56-59, but their Pythagorean win order would put them somewhere around 59-55, given that, as Brian mentioned, they have scored 579 runs and they have allowed 558 runs, so it's not a fluky team, and that's it's an exciting thing. Brian Kilpatrick is on Twitter. He is at PurpleRowBK. There you can go tweet to him about how we ruined his website, and also you can join us with, of course, Connor Farrell and Bobby DeMuro in that regard. And Brian, sorry for ruining your website. Really glad we got to have you back on the show. And we'll do it again, you know, over the off season when the website is more than likely effectively cratered and been disbanded.
Yes, and I will make sure that matter is handled face to face with both of you.
Thanks, Brian. Love you.
Good talking to you guys. Thanks.
Brian Kilpatrick again on Twitter at PurpleRowBK. You can follow him there. You can follow the site. They are at Purple Row, and you can also check out the site, as we hope you do, on a daily basis. PurpleRow.com is where you will find that. All the best Colorado Rockies coverage in town. And yes, I said it, the best. And there is no second place.
Yeah.
It's just Purple Row. And that's not a facetious comment. It's the truth. All the best Rockies stuff is on purplerow.com, except for the Tebow thing, which I didn't click on.
Especially thinking about the Mystics and if the Rockies are cursed by
Go read that today. That's Connor Farrell's Football Friday column, which is the headline, quote, "Are the Rockies cursed by an ancient evil? A paranormal investigation." That's important work. And go check that out on the site right now from our good pal and fellow Purple Row ruiner, Connor Farrell. That's going to do it for the 84th edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. You can get in touch with us, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. I rarely check it, though, so you should probably just tweet at us. We're at Purple Dinocast on Twitter. Anthony is at Master Tones, and I am at Tyler Mon. You can buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. I finally got mine. They're amazing. And so do that and help out the good folks at Humble Monster with all the sweet work that they do. And what else? We got anything else? I think that's about all.
Yeah, we're good.
All right, I think we're good.
Let's win some games this weekend. Yay.
Go win some games this weekend. Go go cheer on a baseball team. Baseball's fun, man. Have fun. They're playing games in August that matter, and that's cool. That's really cool. And they're doing it a year ahead of schedule, and that's even cooler. So enjoy it. And, yeah, till next week. We'll see who, you know.
So you can enrage us this week.
Yeah, who's gonna be our whipping boy at the end of this week. But no, it's enjoy. Take the time to enjoy the fact that they're playing games in August that you care about, because we haven't felt that for a long time, and it's pretty fun. So, yeah, until that time. Enjoy another weekend of baseball in which they're hopefully pulling themselves back into the wild card race. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.